I opened my mouth to speak and found that I had nothing to say. I closed my mouth. The Bikura stood. A breeze moved the brittle chalma fronds and leaves together to make a dry, end-of-summer sound above us. The Bikura nearest to me on the left stepped closer, grasped my forearm with a touch of cool, strong fingers, and spoke a soft sentence that my comm log translated as, "Come, it is time to go to the houses and sleep." It was mid-afternoon. Wondering if the comm log had translated the word sleep properly, or if it might be an idiom or metaphor for die, I nodded and followed them toward the village at the edge of the cleft. Now I sit in the hut and wait. There are rustling sounds. Someone else is awake now. I sit and wait.
Day 97. The Bikura call themselves the 70. I have spent the past 26 hours talking to them, observing, making notes when they take their two-hour, mid-afternoon sleep, and generally trying to record as much data as I can before they decide to slit my throat. Except now I am beginning to believe that they will not hurt me. I spoke to them yesterday after our sleep. Sometimes they do not respond to questions, and when they do, the responses are little better than the grunts or divergent answers one receives from slow children. After their initial question and invitation at our first encounter, none of them originated a single query or comment my way. I questioned them subtly, carefully, cautiously, and with the professional calm of a trained ethnologist. I asked the simplest, most factual questions possible to make sure that the comm log was functioning properly. It was. But the sum total of the answers left me almost as ignorant as I had been 20-some hours before. Finally, tired in body and spirit, I abandoned professional subtlety and asked the group I was sitting with, "Did you kill my companion?" My three interlocutors did not look up from the weaving they were doing on a crude loom. "Yes," said the one I have come to think of as Alpha, because he had been the first to approach me in the forest. "We cut your companion's throat with sharpened stones and held him down and silent while he struggled. He died the true death." "Why?" I asked after a moment. My voice sounded as dry as a corn husk crumbling. "Why did he die the true death?" said Alpha, still not looking up. "Because all of his blood ran out and he stopped breathing." "No," I said. "Why did you kill him?" Alpha did not respond, but Betty, who may or may not be female and Alpha's mate, looked up from her loom and said simply, "To make him die." "Why?" The responses invariably came back and just as invariably failed to enlighten me one iota. After much questioning, I had ascertained that they had killed Tuck to make him die, and that he had died because he had been killed. "What is the difference between death and true death?" I asked, not trusting the comm log or my temper at this point. The third Bikura, Del, grunted a response that the comm log interpreted as, "Your companion died the true death. You did not." Finally, in frustration far too close to rage, I snapped, "Why not? Why didn't you kill me?" All three stopped in the middle of their mindless weaving and looked at me. "You cannot be killed, because you cannot die," said Alpha. "You cannot die because you belong to the cruciform and follow the way of the cross." I had no idea why the damn machine would translate cross as cross one second, and as cruciform the next. "Because you belong to the cruciform." A chill went through me, followed by the urge to laugh. Had I stumbled into that old adventure hollow cliché, the lost tribe that worshipped the god that had tumbled into their jungle, until the poor bastard cuts himself shaving or something, and the tribespeople, assured and a bit relieved at the obvious mortality of their visitor, offer up their erstwhile deity as a sacrifice? It would have been funny if the image of Tuck's bloodless face and raw-rimmed, gaping wound was not so fresh.